Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Yvonne Pierre Show. Hear from people who have overcome obstacles, have inspirational stories to tell, or helpful information to share.
Our child, and we were to take her home. Remarkable advice for that era when many children with Down syndrome were put in institutions.
I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
The Yvonne Pierre Show,
living off with
a variety talk show whose only mission is to empower you.
That were only gonna bring this to my knees. And I turned around and I remember this 48 years later of when I turned around and I said to her, no, I can do it. That kind of set the tone to her right from the beginning that even though I was in a chair, you know, I was still independent. I was still going to do things.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. We are vessels that have the option to allow God to use us.
Make a choice to break the generational curses on our life.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, here is your host, Yvonne Pierre.
Welcome, and thank you all so much for tuning in. I know I haven't done a show in a while, and that's because I've been out promoting my book and promoting the advocacy efforts that I do for the special needs community. But my show is set up to focus specifically on the guests, so I don't want to hold the show up too much talking about me. So if you want more information about the book, The Day My Soul Quiet, and other projects that I'm working on, please visit ypierre.com. I'm really excited being back, and I really have a great guest lined up today. Danette Schott has over 20 years' experience in data research and analysts on topics such as education, teen pregnancy and prevention, the American family, unemployment, mental health services, and childhood disorders. Today, Danette is a proud mom of two beautiful children, a girl and a boy adopted from Russia. After facing challenges with her daughter, such as ADHD, social skills deficit, stress, autism, and more, she was led to research these topics. Using her expertise, Danette Schott is now the founder of SOS Research, an organization that provides parents with steps needed for research and information to help their child succeed. Without further ado, let me welcome my guest. But first, for more information about today's guest, please visit her website at sos-research.com. Welcome.
Hi, Yvonne. Hello there. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk with you today.
Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. I'm excited to share my experiences and information about my new business venture, and I hope your listeners will enjoy what I have to share.
I'm sure they will. I'm really impressed with – I have the guys in front of me, and they're called the SOS Rescue Series.
Rescue Series, yes.
And I like the how, and we're going to talk more about it later in the show, but I like how you broke them into stages, stage one, stage two, and stage three. And the first stage is identifying, and the second stage is analyze, and the third stage is to refine. And I think that it's vital for a parent to have such information in front of them because it is a whole new world that we're entering into once we find out our child has special needs. And, you know, even if we don't have a diagnosis at the time, to know what signs to look for and what to research, and because not everybody is research savvy.
Absolutely, and I know we're going to talk about this more later on, but there's an abundance of information out there. And, you know, there's pros and cons to that because, like you were saying, not everybody's a researcher, and parents are so overwhelmed as it is when they receive, you know, when they know there's something going on with their child that they oftentimes are paralyzed. They don't know where to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't know who to go to because, like with me, with which many other listeners, unless they're meeting me for the first time today, I have an 8-year-old with Down syndrome.
Right.
And when I first had him, I didn't know anything about Down syndrome, nor did I know any parents that have kids with Down syndrome. I knew parents that had kids with special needs, but not specifically Down syndrome. So being able to look at a guide and say, okay, this is how I identify. And I know the guide focuses a lot more on autism and ADHD, but even with Down syndrome, this can also be a good resource.
Absolutely. The process that I use applies to can basically apply to any special need. I have focused more on kind of what I term the invisible special needs, just because that's where my expertise has gone because of my daughter. You know, autism, social skill deficits, anxiety disorder, obsessive compulsion, Tourette's. I mean, a lot of those things are what I got experience with. But my methodology on how to go about getting information and solving the problem surrounding your child with special needs, the methodology can be applied anywhere. Like you
yeah.
said, it can be used by a parent who has a child with Down syndrome, absolutely.
I want to go back a little bit.
Sure.
And talk about what led you to adopt your two children from Russia. And did you know, did you adopt them around the same time?
Okay. You know, way back when, my husband and I were married in 1989, and we had spoken at the time, always having the desire to adopt one child and have one biological. And so back in 1996, we started the process of adopting our first child through from Russia, and we were able to bring our son home by spring of 1997. And what happened was, it was such an incredible experience. Basically, the first time around, there were no bumps. Our son came home very fortunately unscathed by having been in the institutions in Russia. And we saw so many children that I told my husband, I feel my daughter's there. And I just had the desire to go back and bring a second child home. And that's what we did. So 2 years later, in 1999, we brought our daughter home.
And
that's our family at the time.
Okay. And prior to adopting, and adopting period, not just in another country, but adopting period, there's risk involved. I think a lot of people may not know that a lot of the kids that are put up for adoption have special needs. So knowing that that there were risks, or did you know that there were risks, what inspired you to adopt anyway?
Yeah. Well, definitely you're correct, Yvonne, and I think there's so much more information out now. So if you put this in perspective, we started our adoption process 14 years ago, and the information was out there, but it wasn't as prevalent as it is now.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I did my research, and what I found out is I would see things such as, you know, if you're going to do international adoption, there will probably be developmental delays or institutional effects. I mean, these very broad phrases, and what do they really mean? You know, to a future parent, you just think, okay, my child may be behind in school. They may have learning issues. It wasn't spelled out like it is today, and I'll be honest, I did not know the whole picture of what we were getting into. And unfortunately, I still think that's what happens to a lot of parents that are still adopting. They don't realize what they're really getting into, and I agree with you. You should make the assumption you're doing a special needs adoption when you go this route. And we definitely did not have that assumption when we started.
So knowing that, so once you got her home and got everything, got her settled in and made it a home for her, when did you realize, When was she diagnosed?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, we realized the moment we laid eyes on her over in Moscow that there was a problem. You know, this was a child that arched her back when we held her, would not look us in the face, rocked herself violently to sleep every night, and her preference was to be completely by herself. She was grossly underweight. She was 18 months old, and she weighed 14 pounds. You know, couldn't walk. I mean, she looked like a baby in my arms. Had almost no hair because of the poor nutrition. So we knew that we had a lot of issues. We certainly didn't know exactly what we were getting into. A lot of long talks over in Moscow, and we decided to still bring her home. But what eventually happened was she language did not develop. After being home for 9 months, she was still not saying mama or papa, which is the same in Russia. So, you know, those sounds she had heard, and she wasn't using any language. She had kind of her attachment was the inverse order of what you would expect, and this was due to having many caretakers. So because I was home all the time, I'm the person she disliked the most. And when my husband came home, she preferred him. And if a stranger came to the door, that was yet her biggest preferred person. So we knew we had a lot of issues, brought her around to a number of people. And it was finally at Stanford University, a doctor there diagnosed her with autism about a month shy of 2 years old.
How old was she when you adopted her?
So she was 18 months, 16 months.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, she had been home long enough that things should have been happening. And I knew that because I had experienced it with my son. I don't even remember a time my son did not speak English. It was such an easy transition, and it was completely different with my daughter.
So after seeing the signs, and I want to say, too, because you have the analytical background and ability, is that what kind of helped you to start researching to find out more about what was going on with her, or knowing where to, who to talk to, where to go?
I think so. I think it's just the way I'm made up. It's my personality type. I'm a researcher at heart, and I guess that's just part of who I am. And I looked at it as I had a problem and I had to solve it. And I won't deny that as we were going towards down the path and headed towards autism, I did everything I could to try to convince myself that that's not what she had. I mean, I did so much research trying to find another answer, but I kept coming back to the same thing. It was autism. And it took me a while to accept that and to start kind of going down that path.
Do you think that having to get past that denial stage helped you to open you up to focus more on her needs, or focus more on, okay, now that I've accepted this, this is what needs to be done?
You know, it's funny, and I kind of paralleled everything. So I had researched that you could basically, that there were two good interventions for autism, you know, ABA, the Applied Behavior Analysis, or floor time. And so I had researched that. I kind of knew what we should be doing. That even though I was in denial, what I was trying to do was convince myself I didn't have to go that route, because it ends up with people in your house pretty much 6 days a week. You have a revolving door of therapists.
Yeah.
And so by the time the doctor gave us the diagnosis, I had already picked out a consultant. I had her just in the background, And within 2 weeks, I had a program up and running. So I think, yes, I was in denial, but there was also a part of me that was being real realistic and trying to line it up, because I knew that the sooner you started things, the, you know, the better your prognosis.
The early intervention?
Absolutely, yes.
So you had a career. You had
yes.
a full-time career.
Yep.
Did you stick with your career?
You know, I did for a number of years until my daughter was about six. So I stuck with it for about 4 years. I had a consulting business with high-tech companies here in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, with my son, I had a nanny in place, thought that I could continue that path. And, you know, very early on realized that my daughter, I'd walk into the room and she wouldn't even look at me. So I knew a change had to happen.
Yeah.
So probably within 6 months, I got rid of the nanny, but I also foolishly thought I could continue my business. So
yeah.
I would try to fit it in the evenings, and I'd try to fit it in when the kids were napping. And I tried to do that for 4 more years, slowly taking less and less work, you know, trying to move it part-time, which was very difficult, until I finally just told my husband I couldn't handle doing both. It was a full-time job running the ABA program for my daughter and getting her to all her therapies.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was no longer giving my clients what they deserved. And so my, you know, and obviously my daughter comes first.
Right.
And I think, as you know, Yvonne, nobody's going to take care of your child like you are.
True.
Nobody cares as much. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Nobody cares as much as you. And so I knew this was something I couldn't hand over to somebody else. I had to do it myself. So I eventually shut my business down.
So after...
Go ahead.
So after... No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say, even though I shut my business down, which was, it seemed very emotional at the time, it was probably one of the biggest blessings, because that's when I realized not only my daughter, but how much my son needed me.
Yeah.
And it was really a blessing in disguise to be able to be a mom full-time for a number of years and give both kids what they needed.
So how did you make the transition from the information, all the information that you had learned by researching and getting the information from your daughter, how did you make that transition into, look, this is something that other parents need as well?
You know, over the early years, a lot of parents would be referred to me by professionals that I worked with. You know, they'd say, I've got a parent here that's lost. Would you mind if I gave them your phone number? Or I'd meet parents through various organizations. I spent a lot of time on the phone with many, many parents, just trying to walk them through the process. As they would tell me, I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. So I would try to kind of guide them through what I had done.
Uh-huh.
And as I had been accumulating all this information, kind of, I guess, in my analytical way, I was putting them all the information into various files and keeping it separate. And one day, you know, as my daughter was getting older and I had more time, my husband and I sat down and started talking about it, and I realized that I could put this information into a fashion that more parents could then use it, that I could kind of put what I was doing on the telephone with parents, I could put them into guides and help
yeah.
more parents that way. So it kind of just evolved over time.
So now you have SOS Research. Could you tell us a little bit about the organization and what the mission is?
Sure. Well, SOS Research, the mission is basically to provide information to parents so that they can help their child reach their potential, whatever that is. And SOS currently does that in two ways. We distribute information in the form of guides, like we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got a parent coach, Stephanie Scott, who works with parents on various day-to-day life issues. And, you know, those can, so if somebody looks at the guides and realizes they have more specific questions, they can then work with the parent coach. And my long-term goal for SOS is I'd like to be able to build a virtual network of professionals that are available to assist parents on a variety of these special needs topics.
Oh, good. Good. I like that. So the we mentioned the three guides in the beginning. The,
yes.
They're called the SOS Rescue Series.
Yes.
Why did you decide to break them into three separate guides?
Well, as we had kind of touched on at the beginning, you know, there's an abundance of information out there for parents.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, on the one hand, this is wonderful. On the other hand, it can be completely overwhelming.
Yeah.
And what I found myself doing is buying book after book when really all I wanted out of that book was one chapter. And I would look at the rest of the book because maybe it pertained to a different phase of my child's life. And I'd say, oh, that looks great. Remember to go back to that when she's in second grade or when she's in middle school. And the reality is I never did. You know, I've got
yeah.
all these books, and you probably do too, Yvonne, that you,
yeah.
you know, exactly, you read one chapter. And so the guides initially started out as one guide, and it became huge, and it became overwhelming, and I realized I'm doing the same thing that everyone else does. And so I realized I was providing too much information before it was needed. So I decided to break the guides into their logical stages,
uh-huh.
and let parents be in control of what they need when they need it. And you know, they can start with stage one, and in 6 months, if they decide that they want to move on to the next one, they can. And this also, you know, I'm trying to keep the guides priced as cost effectively as possible because I want everybody to be able to get to the information. You can probably relate to this, Yvonne. Wanting something for your child, you know, knowing that this would be good for your child and not being able to afford it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been through that for years. And so I again, I thought by reaching many parents, I could keep the cost down as low as possible.
I like that, too, and I'm going to kind of reiterate what you just said, but I like the fact that you broke it into these stages because one parent may have already went through the phase of identifying.
Sure.
But now they want to get all they need now is to kind of analyze and kind of and to refine. So they may just need the two guides. So
exactly.
And then another thing that I like too is that they can put it in their purse.
Do you know, Yvonne, that
I like the five.
Oh, see, that and that is so great that you picked up on that. Again, you know, I would bring my daughter and my son to many, you know, gymnastic classes and all those kinds of things. And you sit there for an hour, and when you're in the middle of researching things for your kid, it's like you want to spend all your free time doing that. I hated bringing books because I hated opening up a big book saying, autism or what, and then having all these questions come your way. I just wanted to be able to sit and read and be left alone. I consciously made the guides so that they could be slotted into a purse, taken out, just kind of read on the side, and
mm-hmm.
they were just really easy to carry around.
Yeah.
Convenient for
the
parent.
The first thing I picked up when I looked at the guides, I was like, this is something that the parents don't have to wait until they get home or have to worry about carrying this big, bulky book around.
Right.
It's something they can read while they're on the bus or on a train or just sitting in a lobby waiting and thinking of lobbies. I can really see these guides at given out at doctor's offices. Have you considered that?
Oh, Yvonne, that's exactly. That, to me, is one of our primary, one of my primary goals. I've spoken to a number of pediatricians and received nothing but favorable feedback. And so right now, you know, just in the process of working with pediatricians, to figure out how we can get these to their patients. As one doctor, working with one doctor, what he said, he feels he's in an administrative position with a larger clinic of doctors. And he said, you know, what the problem that they were trying to solve is, you know, you give a parent a diagnosis and they walk out of your door. And he said, first of all, they only remember maybe 20% of what you said because they were so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And he said what he saw the guides as is the perfect solution. Hand it to the parent. Now they've got something in their hands that when they calm down and they're ready to start really looking into it, now they've got something they can actually, it's concrete, they can look at, some place to start.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I really do. As a parent, what would you say, you know, for that parent, now that you brought up being overwhelmed, and it is a lot of information because this is a whole new ballpark.
Sure.
And just trying to sort through, okay, now what? Okay, now, you know, where do I go? Who do I talk to? What? It's a lot of information being thrown at you at one time. How do you, or what do you, what is your advice to parents who do feel overwhelmed and how you were able to overcome, to focus, to get past the disability? To focus on specifically what the child needs and not identify your daughter as, you know, as a child with, just a child with the special needs, but to look at her as this is my child.
Sure. Well, I think what happens is over time, you know, every parent has their hopes and dreams for their child.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have our hopes and our dreams for our child. They've just been revised. And so I think once you get to the point that you can revise your hopes and dreams, and that's where, you know, helping your child reach his or her potential comes in, realizing that your child still has a potential, still has an ability to contribute and to do things in their capacity, that's when, you know, I think as the mama bear, you start realizing, okay, now how am I going to help my child get there?
Yeah.
And so it's, I guess I would say acceptance at first, you know, accepting that it's not like what we thought it was going to be, and that's okay, and then starting to decide, well, how is it going to be, and what can I do to provide my child with the best?
Yeah.
To give her the future, the best future she can have.
And I like that. I really do, and I think that, you know, the same for me with Zion. When I first found out, we were in the hospital, and it was right after I gave birth.
Uh-huh.
Well, not right after, but it's a long story. But after I had him, while we were still in the hospital, he was diagnosed with Down syndrome. Well, they didn't know for sure, but the thing that helped me, because I initially did break down because
sure.
I thought the worst. The
sure.
problem was I thought the worst. This was a whole new thing. I didn't know what to expect. During my pregnancy, I was gestational diabetic, so I was on bed rest, and, you know, they were I was a high-risk pregnancy.
Okay.
So during that time, you know, my biggest fear was bringing him home.
Sure.
And when I saw the team of doctors, me and Zion's dad went down to, because they took him to pediatric ICU. When we went down to see him and you see this team of doctors and they're pulling you to the side and taking you in the room and saying, okay, here's the information. This is what he probably won't be able to do and, you know, and all that. And then I come out and I see him with all these plugs and, I mean, you know, all these tubes and,
mm-hmm.
and stuff around him. This is my child, you
right.
know. So I'm looking at, you know, my biggest concern was him living.
Right.
And initially seeing all this going on, not being in the dark, not knowing what's next, fearing the unknown, I broke down. I ran into the bathroom, and I just broke down. And then it was then something came over me and said, wait a minute, Yvonne, he's here.
Right.
Get up and go in there and be there for him. This is not about you. So, you know, and that's how I deal with him. It's about Zion. It's not about, you know, and all of the things that I've had to face, you know, as far as the challenges and stuff has
sure.
really, really, which is bringing me to my next question.
Uh-huh.
All of the things that I've went through with both of my children, there was a lot of lessons that I've learned and I've grown from, and that has gave me a new perspective on life. And I wanted to ask you, going through the different things and even with the business, the experience of SOS Research,
sure.
what lessons have you learned?
Okay. First of all, I guess through my daughter is, you know, I look at her and how hard she works.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lesson of not giving up, I mean, how dare I give up when I look at she's not willing to give up.
Right.
And she works so hard, twice as hard as most. To also try things that are difficult or uncomfortable, again, watching her have to, she, you know, as she desperately wants more and more friends, and she will approach a group of kids and talk to them and reach out, and she may be rejected, but she's going to keep doing that. So, again, you know, going and trying those things that are hard and difficult and maybe make you uncomfortable, but try them. And then don't let others define you. You know, I think kids are really cruel. People
yeah.
are too.
yeah.
to kids that look different, that are different. And letting her, you know, teaching her self-confidence, good self-esteem, and that don't let others define you. And then when you talk about the SOS Research, you know, my whole thing, when I started SOS Research, I thought, you know, again, my thing was to get the information out to the parents, and I thought that would be my satisfaction. And it is, but I got to tell you, Yvonne, I'm meeting some of the most incredible people, such
yeah.
as you're one great example. I never realized the parents and the professionals that I was going to encounter, and it gives you just a whole nother good feeling about humanity. There's good people out there. There's people that want to make a difference and that are working hard. And regardless of what you hear on the news, it's fabulous to be able to come across all these people day to day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would attest to that. And you're one of the amazing people I've met, too. A lot of the things that I have experienced, the great experiences I've had, even doing a radio show and through the advocacy efforts that I do, I have absolutely met some remarkable people. And I want to thank you first for the compliment. And
sure.
I want to say, too, that you are in that group of people that I'm absolutely amazed by how you were able to combine, you know, your professionalism with the experience that you had with your daughter, and to not just keep it to yourself, but to help others with it, and to be a contribution to society. I really admire and love that about what you're doing.
Thank you, Yvonne. You know, it's early on, so many years ago, I didn't give back like I should have because I was so concentrated on my daughter. I mean,
mm-hmm.
she was number one. I couldn't see past that.
Right.
And I actually feel this is a gift that's been given to me that I can actually give back now because I feel wonderful, obviously, doing it. And I'm so happy that I can do it. And yet if you had asked me 10 years ago would I be doing something like this, I didn't even think about it. I couldn't
yeah.
see past, you know, the day of therapists coming into my home once again, and you know, the appointments that were coming up for that day.
Yeah.
This is a nice point in my life compared to where it has been over the past 10 years.
Yeah, and I think, too, I wanted to point out that, you know, we don't know what we're being prepared for,
right,
what God is preparing us for. And I think that even with the things that I'm doing, I didn't see, you know, 10 years from now or even, I mean, 10 years ago or even 15 years ago that I'll be doing what I'm doing now. But I think that, you know, having Zion in my life, and I don't think that every parent that has a child with special needs is a requirement for them to make a change in the community.
Right.
I think that, you know, it's part of those who are or do decide to, and advocacy too is not just doing what we're doing, but advocacy too can be just speaking up for your child in the school system.
Absolutely.
Because even though you're just speaking up for your child, you know, that can go a very, very long way because not enough parents are speaking up.
You know, and that's such a good point, Yvonne, because I would say initially when we finally got into the public school system, that's what I was doing, is I was advocating for my daughter, which I had a lot of parents then calling me, what did you get? How did you get it? What did you do? Because that's where it all starts, you know, getting the services that you need that you can't afford, but you know your child needs. And it's tough. It's tough to learn how to maneuver the school district.
What would you say, Bate, throughout your experience and the research that you found, what would you say are the top things or advice you would give to parents to reach their child's potential?
You know, first of all, I'd say don't set the bar too low for your child, and don't allow anybody else to set the bar low. I think it's easy for school districts to use the special need as the reason that a child isn't attaining certain things. But just remember, as a parent, you know your child the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mode of operation for my daughter was that she could do everything until it was proven otherwise. And I think sometimes the school district has the assumption that the child can't do certain things. And, you know, I was told early on when she was 3 that I needed to just accept that this is who she is and what she can do. And she has shocked everybody.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't accept it until she showed me she couldn't do it. And she hasn't shown me that yet. And so keep the bar high and don't let somebody convince you that your child can't do something.
I absolutely love that. And for more than one reason, but I love it because, you know, we as parents, we don't want to set limits. And whether your child has special needs or not,
right?
Putting limits on our child, and we don't know what they are able to do until they have shown us what they can do. And like a lot of times with Zion, my youngest one, and with Zaire too, I push them, you know, not too hard, but I push them. And then when, like you were saying, once they prove that they can't do it, then, you know, I'll you know, back off a little. But,
sure.
But, you know, I do have high expectations for them until you have proven otherwise. So I absolutely love that approach, and I think that's what will push any child to really see what their potential and what their, you know, strengths and weaknesses are by actually trying.
Right. And I think, you know, the school district, in their defense, I know they come across many, many parents, and there are parents who don't have a realistic view of who their child is. They haven't come to terms yet with what they can and can't do. But if I had listened to the school district, you know, 10 years ago, my child would be in a special ed class and would have been there since she was 3. And she's really yet to be in one. I mean, she's kept up academically, and yet
yeah.
I was told she wouldn't be able to.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think even with Down syndrome, you know, of course, I know that with Zion, he academically he is behind and he is in special education, but I still work with him at home. I don't just rely on the school to teach him.
Yeah.
I set up shop at home to work with him as well because we are their teachers. We are the first. We're with them more than, you know, we're around them more than the doctors and the therapists, because the therapist may only see them once a week.
Yeah.
But we're seeing them 7 days a week. So I think that is vital, even if, you know, you're not sure what to work with them on or whatever. Just getting advice from the therapist and,
mm-hmm.
and from the teachers and you know, just kind of paying attention to what they're doing. And being a partnership, it's a partnership, you know, with the team that's working with our children. So, you know, in order to be a partner, we have to contribute as well.
It's
an
excellent point, Yvonne, because I think there, again, I think some parents are looking for somebody to, quote unquote, fix their child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm bringing them to school, I'm bringing them here to you, fix them and then return them. And you made an excellent point that the biggest job is on our shoulders, the parents' shoulders, because you have them with you so much more of the time. And
yeah.
it's our job to continue the education and what our child needs.
Yeah. And
it,
even if you're not, even if they don't know how to, because not everyone has the teaching skills, but even if you don't know how, getting a friend or someone who knows how to work with not just special needs, but work that may have some teaching skills that can teach them, you know, certain things. Just networking with other parents and seeing what they're doing and
exactly.
and everything. It's important.
Because teaching doesn't necessarily have to be the traditional teaching. I mean, teaching goes on outside your home, when you're socializing, when you're going to McDonald's, when you're, you know, teaching them independence. And I remember, you know, forcing my daughter, me staying in the car the first time parked in front of the door and having her go in and make a purchase on her own because her anxiety was so high she didn't want to. So,
yeah.
you know, you're old enough. You go in there, you make the purchase, here's the money, you know how to handle money. And, you know, so teaching can encompass so many different ways to help your child grow.
Yeah. And I want to say, too, on a lot of the parents' behalf as well, if you're working a full-time job, you're a single parent, you don't really have the time or whatever, even if it's just simple as reading to them at night or reading to them once a week, or, you know, I'm not saying you have to pull out all the books, but, you know, or all the workbooks, the school books, but, you know, just reading to them and just teaching them their alphabets, just it can be something that simple, but doing something to contribute toward their education is vital.
It is
to their
vital.
Growth and their
Absolutely.
Education.
Absolutely. And I will agree with you, Yvonne. I mean, I've had the benefit of having, you know, a partner, having somebody who works and supports the family and has allowed me to do the other part. I can't imagine being a single mom. I can't imagine working full-time. I think that parents like you that do that are incredible. It's a lot of work and a huge commitment.
Yeah.
Not to mention how exhausted I am, so I can't imagine how you feel.
Well, I work at home, so I'm at home most of the time. But I do, I have been in a position where I was working, and it is hard because a lot of corporate world don't accept, well, I need to take this day off, or I need to take,
right.
you know, these days off, or I need to be there to meet with the therapist, or, you know, you have a lot of, some companies are a little more flexible and they understand, but it's also the fear of going in, you know, even when I was job hunting, going in telling them that I have a child with special needs because I thought they may not They may discriminate against me getting a job because they figure I will have to take too many days off. So I think that even if you do have to work, having, you know, a flexible boss, or if you don't have that, you know, getting somebody in your life or getting the right daycare, that's going to, because I took him to a really good daycare that did help out a lot. They didn't have a lot of kids with special needs, and there were some things I had to talk to them about. I had to teach them about, like, don't let Zion, you know, I came in one day and Zion was, you know, off doing his own thing and all the other kids were sitting down watching TV. So I said, well, why isn't Zion sitting down watching TV? You know, and one of the kids was like, well, you know, Zion, you know, let Zion do whatever he want to do.
Right.
And I said, no. I said, if all the kids have to sit down and watch TV, Zion has to sit down and watch TV too. He's not going to learn if you don't teach him. So it's certain things, you know, because even with those that's working around, I don't want the pity.
Right.
I want you to push him to do right, because not everywhere he go, he's going to be able to do whatever he want. So he has to be taught how to sit down and watch TV, and Zion can do it, you know. So, you know, just trying to teach them, you know, not to set low expectations of him and to really push him and, you know, include him with the rest of the class. But in doing so, it was more beneficial to not just Zion, but it was beneficial to the typical kids that was in at the daycare as well, because they learned a lot from Zion too.
Absolutely. And that's what I had learned through looking for a preschool for my daughter. She went to, I think, 3 or 4 different ones before there was one that really worked with us. And the director, that's what the director of the preschool said to me. There are special needs people throughout our world. We all interact with them. We all are going to live our life with them.
Mm-hmm.
She said if every preschool would take in a couple, it would expose kids, and it would give parents a place for their child, and it would expose typical kids to special needs.
And they won't be looked at so different.
Yes, and unfortunately, she was different than most preschools from what I had found.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hard time finding a fit.
So I think that I really appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing your information and sharing your story. And I commend you for all you're doing to contribute toward the special needs community, because you give your website to our listeners, and so they'll know where to go to get information. And also, I noticed, and I wanted to let the listeners know that you are also on other social networks as well.
Yes. So my website is www.sos-research.com. And if you go to my website, you can also link to my blog. The blog is sos-research-blog.com. And on my blog, you've got my Facebook page that you can link to, Twitter. And the blog contains just a lot of free information, resources, product reviews, things that I've learned, my personal experiences that I'm trying to write about to show parents that they're not alone.
Thank you so much. And I wanted to say your name again and the spelling.
Okay, thank you.
Danette Schott, and it's S-C-H-O-T-T. Danette, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Yvonne, and I really enjoyed this. I find what you do very inspiring, and thank you for giving me this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I was meant to fly. Oh, no matter who pushes me, I know I'm not gonna let you. I'm not gonna let you get me down. No, no, no. I
thank you so much for tuning in today. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I thank you for choosing this time to spend with me, your host, Yvonne Pierre. For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to simply let me know what you think about today's show or previous shows, visit me at ypierre.com. That's www.ypierre.com. Remember to keep God first, know that you are blessed, and always stay true to yourself. I love you, God loves you, and thank you for listening.